Igor and Tonka arrived back late, without saying anything. Nor did Sergeant Jackram. The squad moved off. Polly marched at the back with Carborundum. This meant she could keep a wary eye on Lofty, whoever she was. For the first time, Polly really looked at her. She was easy to miss because she was always, as it were, in Tonka's shadow. She was short, although now Polly knew she was female, the word petite could decently be used, and was dark and dark-haired and had a strange, self-absorbed look. And she was always marching with Tonka. Come to think of it, she always slept close to him too. Ah, so that was it. She's following her boy, Polly thought. It was kind of romantic and very, very dumb. Now she knew to look beyond the clothes and haircut. She could see all the little clues that Lofty was a girl, and a girl who hadn't planned enough. She saw Lofty whisper something to Tonka, who half turned and gave Polly a look of instant hatred and a hint of threat. I can't tell her, she thought. She would tell him. I can't afford to let them know. I've put too much into this. I didn't just cut my hair and wear trousers. I planned. Ah, yes, the plans. It had begun as a sudden strange fancy, but it had continued as a plan. At first, Polly had started to watch boys closely. This had been reciprocated, hopefully, by a few of them to their subsequent disappointment. She watched how they moved. She listened to the rhythm of what passed, among boys, for conversation. She'd noted how they punched one another in greeting. It was a new world. She had good muscles for a girl, because running a large inn was all about moving heavy things, and she took over a number of the grittier chores, which coarsened her hands nicely. She'd even worn a pair of her brother's old breeches under her long skirt to get the feel of them. A woman could be beaten for that sort of thing. Men dressed like men and women like women. Doing it the other way round was a blasphemous abomination unto Nuggan, according to Father Jupe. And that was probably the secret of her success so far, she thought, as she trudged through a puddle. People didn't look for a woman in trousers. To the casual observer, men's clothes and short hair and a bit of a swagger were what it took to be a man. Oh, and a second pair of socks. That had been gnawing at her, too. Someone knew about her, just like she knew about Lofty. And he hadn't given her away. She'd feared it was Eyebrow, but doubted it. He'd have told the sergeant about her, he was that sort. Right now she was guessing it was Maledict, but perhaps that was just because he seemed so knowing all the time. No, he'd been out cold, and, in any case, no, not the troll. And Igor lisped. Tonka? After all, he'd know about Lofty, so maybe... No, because why would he want to help Polly? No, there was nothing but danger in owning up to Lofty. The best she could do was try and see to it that the girl didn't give both of them away. She could hear Tonka whispering to his girl.
I just died, so he cut off one of his legs and an arm and sewed him on men who needed him, just like I'd done a tear. You should have seen it. You couldn't see his fingers move. And he has all these ointments that just...
Tonka's voice died away. Strappy was haranguing Wazzer again.
That Strappy really gets on my crags, muttered Carborundum. You want I should pull the head off of him? I could make it look like an accident.
Better not, said Polly, but she did entertain the thought for a moment. They'd reached a road junction, where the road down from the mountains joined what passed for a main highway. It was crowded. There were carts and wheelbarrows, people driving herds of cows, grandmothers carrying all the household possessions on their backs, a general excitement of pigs and children, and it was all heading one way. It was the opposite way to the way the squad was going. The people and animals flowed around it like a stream around an inconvenient rock. The recruits bunched up. It was that or be separated by cows. Sergeant Jackram stood up in the cart.
"Private Carborundum!"
"Yes, Sergeant,"
rumbled the troll. "To the front!"
That helped. The stream still flowed, but at least the crowds parted some distance further along the road and gave the squad a wide berth, no one wants to barge up against even a slow-moving troll. But faces stared as the people hurried by. An old lady darted out for a moment, pressed a loaf of stale bread into Tonka's hands and said, "You poor boys," before being swept away in the throng.
"What's this all about, Sarge?" said Maledict. "These look like refugees."
"Talk like that spreads alarm and despondency," shouted Corporal Strappy.
"Oh, you mean they're just people getting away early for the holidays to avoid the rush," said Maledict. "Sorry I got confused. It must be that woman carrying a whole haystack we just passed."
"Do you know what can happen to you for cheeking a superior officer?" screamed Strappy.
"No, tell me, is it worse than whatever it is these people are running away from?"
"You signed up, Mr. Bloodsucker. You obey orders."
"Right, but I don't remember anyone ordering me not to think."
"Enough of that," snapped Jackram. "Less shouting down there. Move on. Carborundum, you give people a push if they don't make way, you hear?"
They moved on. After a while, the press of people abated a little, so that what had been a torrent became a trickle. Occasionally, there would be a family group, or just one hurrying woman, burdened with bags. One old man was struggling with a wheelbarrow full of turnips. "They are even taking the crops out of the fields," Polly noted. And everyone moved at a kind of half-run, as if things would be a little better when they'd caught up with the mass of people ahead. Or merely overtook them, perhaps. The squad was passed by an old woman bent double under the weight of a black-and-white pig. And then there was just the road, rutted and muddy. An afternoon mist was rising from the fields on either side, quiet and clammy. After the noise of the refugees, the silence of the low countryside was suddenly oppressive. The only sound was the trudge and splash of the recruits' boots.
"Permission to speak, Sarge?" said Polly.
"Yes, Private," said Jackram.
"How far is it to Plotts?"
"You don't have to tell him, Sarge," said Strappy.
"About 5 miles," said Sergeant Jackram. "You'll get your uniforms and weapons at the depot there."
"That's a military secret, Sarge," Strappy whined.
"We could shut our eyes so's we don't see what we're wearing. How about that?" said Maledict.
"Stop that, Private Maledict," said Jackram. "Just keep moving and guard that tongue."
They plodded on. The road grew muddier. A breeze sprang up, but instead of carrying the mist away, it merely streamed it across the damp fields in twisty, clammy, unpleasant shapes. The sun became an orange ball. Polly saw something large and white flutter across the field, blown by the wind. At first she thought it was a migratory lesser egret that had left things a little late, but it was clearly being blown by the wind. It flopped down once or twice, and then, as a gust caught it, blew across the road and wrapped itself across Corporal Strappy's face. He screamed. Lofty grabbed at the fluttering thing, which was damp. It tore in his, her, hands, and most of it dropped away from the struggling corporal.
"It's just a bit of paper," she said.
Strappy flailed at it.
"I knew that," he said. "I never asked you."
Polly picked up one of the torn scraps. The paper was thin and muddy, although she recognised the words Ankh Morpork, the god-awful city. And the genius of Strappy was that anything he was against automatically sounded attractive. "Ankh Morpork Times," she read aloud before the corporal snatched it out of her hand.
"You can't just read anything you see, Parts," he shouted. "You don't know who wrote it."
He dropped the damp scrap onto the mud and stamped on it.
"Now let's move on," he said.
They moved on. When the squad was more or less in rhythm and staring at nothing more than its boots or the mist ahead of it, Polly raised her right hand to chest height and carefully turned it palm up so that she could see the fragment of paper that had soggily stayed behind when the rest had been pulled away. "No surrender to Alliance," says Duchess, 97. From William de Word, Valley of the Kneck, Sectober 7. Borogravian troops, assisted by Lord Light Infantry, took Kneck Keep this mo... After fierce hand-to-hand fight, I write its armaments, which are being turned on the rem... Borogravian forces... His Grace Commander told the Times that surrender had been... View the enemy commander... Load of stiff-necked fools don't... In the paper. It is understood... Desperate situ... Spread famine... Across... No alternate... Invasion...
They were winning, weren't they? So where did the word surrender come from? And what was the alliance? And then there was the problem of Strappy, which had been growing on her. She could see he got on Jackram's nerves as well, and he had a struttiness about him, a certain, sockiness, as if he was really the one in charge. Perhaps it was just general unpleasantness, but... "Corporal," she said.
"Yes, Parts," said Strappy. His nose was still very red.
"We are winning this war, aren't we?" said Polly. She'd given up correcting him. Suddenly every ear in the squad was listening.
"Don't you bother yourself about that, Parts," snapped the corporal. "Your job is to fight."
"Right, Corp, but so I'll be fighting on the winning side, will I?"
Oh, we've got someone who asks too many questions here, Sarge," said Strappy.
"Yeah, don't ask questions, Perks," said Jackram, absent-mindedly.
"So we are losing, then?" said Tonka.
Strappy turned on him.
"That's spreading alarm and despondency again, that is," he shrieked. "That's aiding the enemy."
"Yeah, knock it off, Private Halter," said Jackram. "Okay, now get to..."
"Halter, I'm placing you under arrest for," Strappy began.
"Corporal Strappy, a word in your shell-like ear, please. You men, you stop here," growled the sergeant, clambering down from the cart.
Jackram walked back down the road about 50 feet. Glaring around at the squad, the corporal strutted after him.
"Are we in trouble?" said Tonka.
"You'll guess," said Maledict.
"Bound to be," said Shufti. "Strappy can always get you for something."
"They're having an argument," said Maledict, "which is odd, don't you think? A sergeant is supposed to give orders to a corporal."
"We are winning, aren't we?" said Shufti. "I mean, I know there's a war, but... I mean, we get weapons, don't we, and we'll... Well, they've got to train us, right? It'll probably be over by then, right? Everyone says we're winning." "I will ask the Duchess in my prayers tonight," said Wazza.
The rest of the squad looked at one another with a shared expression.
"Yeah, right, Waz," said Tonka kindly. "You do that."
The sun was setting fast, half hidden in the mist. Here, on the muddy road between damp fields, it suddenly felt as cold as it could be.
"No one says we're winning, except maybe Strappy," said Polly. "They just say that everyone says we're winning." "The men he got repaired didn't even say that," said Tonka. "They said, 'You poor bastards, you'll leg it if you've got any sense.'"
"Thank you for sharing," said Maledict.
"It looks as though everyone's feeling sorry for us," said Polly.
"Yeah, well, thumb I, and I am us," said Igor. "Thumb of those men."
All right, stop lollygagging, you lot," shouted Strappy, marching up.
"Corporal," said the sergeant quietly, hauling himself back onto the cart.
Strappy paused, and then, in a voice dripping with syrup and sarcasm, he went on,
"Excuse me, the sergeant myself would be obliged if you brave heroes-to-be would join us in a little light marching, jolly good. And there will be embroidery later on. Best foot forward, ladies."
She heard Tonka gasp. Strappy turned, eyes glinting with sinister anticipation.
"Oh, someone doesn't like being called a lady, eh?" he said. "Dear me, Private Halter, you've got a lot to learn, haven't you? You're a sissy little lady until we make a man of you, right? And I dread to think how long that's going to take. Move!"
"I know," thought Polly as they set off. "It takes about 10 seconds and a pair of socks. One sock, and you could make Strappy." Plots turned out to be like Plune, but it was worse because it was bigger. The rain started again as they marched into the cobbled square. It looked as though it always rained here. The buildings were grey and mud-spattered near the ground. Roof gutters overflowed, pouring rain onto the cobbles and sending a spray over the recruits. There was no one about. Polly saw open doors banging in the wind and bits of debris in the streets, and remembered the lines of hurrying people on the road. There was no one here. Sergeant Jackram climbed down from the cart as Strappy bawled them into line. Then the sergeant took over, leaving the corporal to glower from the sidelines.
"This is wonderful, Plots," he said. "Have a look round so that if you is killed and goes to hell, it won't come as a shock. You'll be bivvying in that barracks over there what is military property."
He waved a hand towards a crumbling stone building that looked about as military as a barn. "You will be issued with your equipment, and tomorrow it's a nice long march to Krotz, where you will arrive as boys and leave as men. Did I just say something funny, Perks?"
No, I thought so too.
Attention! That means stand up straight. That's straight! Yelled Strappy.
A young man was riding across the square on a tired, skinny brown horse, which was quite suitable because he was a tired, skinny man. The skinniness was helped by the fact that he wore a tunic that had clearly been made for someone a couple of sizes larger. The same applied to his helmet. He must have padded it, Polly thought. One cough and it'll be over his eyes. Sergeant Jackram snapped off a salute as the officer approached.
Jackram, sir. You'll be Lieutenant Blau, sir.
Well done, Sergeant.
These are the recruits from upriver, sir. Fine body of men, sir.
The rider peered at the squad. He actually leaned forward over the horse's neck, causing rain to pour off his helmet.
This is all, Sergeant?
Yes, sir.
Most of them look very young, said the lieutenant, who didn't look very old.
Yes, sir.
And isn't that one a troll?
Yes, sir. Well spotted, sir.
And the one with stitches all round his head?
He's an Igor, sir. Sort of like a special clan up in the mountains, sir.
Do they fight?
Can take a man apart very quickly, sir, as I understand it, said Jackram, his expression not changing.
The young lieutenant sighed.
Well, I'm sure they're all good fellows, he said. Now then, men, I...
Pay attention and listen to what the lieutenant has to say, bawled Strappy.
The lieutenant shuddered.
Thank you, Corporal, he said. Men, I have good news, he added, but in the tone of one who hasn't. You were probably expecting a week or two in the training camp in Crotts, yes? But I'm glad to be able to tell you that the war is progressing so well that you are to go directly to the front.
Polly heard one or two gasps and a snigger from Corporal Strappy.
All of you are to go to the lines, said the lieutenant. That includes you too, Corporal. Your time for action has come at last.
The snigger stopped.
Sorry, sir, said Strappy. The front? But you know that I'm well, you know about the special duties.
My orders said all able-bodied men, Corporal, said Blouse. I expect that you'll be itching for the fray after all these years, eh, a young man like you?
Strappy said nothing.
However, said the lieutenant, fumbling under his soaking cloak, I do have a package here for you, Sergeant Jackram. A very welcome one, I've no doubt.
Jackram took the packet gingerly.
Thank you, sir. I'll look at this later on, he began.
On the contrary, Sergeant Jackram, said Blouse, your last recruits should see this, since you are a soldier and, as it were, a father of soldiers. And so it's only right that they see a fine soldier get his reward. An honourable discharge, Sergeant.
Blouse spoke the words as if they had cream and a little cherry on top. Apart from the rain, the only sound now was Jackram's pudgy finger slowly ripping open the package.
Oh, he said, like a man in shock. Good. A picture of the Duchess. That's 18 I have now. Oh, a piece of paper saying it's a medal. So it looks like we've even run out of pot metal now. Oh, and my discharge with a printing of the Duchess's very own signature itself.
He turned the packet over and shook it.
Not my 3 months' back pay, though.
Three loud hurrahs for Sergeant Jackram, said the lieutenant to the rain and wind. Hip, hip!
But I thought we needed every man, sir, said Jackram.
Judging by all the notes pinned on that packet, it has been following you around for years, Sergeant, said Blouse. You know the military. That is your official discharge, I'm afraid. I cannot rescind it, I'm sorry.
But, Jackram began,
it bears the Duchess's signature, Sergeant. Will you argue with that? I said I'm sorry. In any case, what would you do? We will not be sending out any more recruiting parties.
What? But we always need men, sir, Jackram protested. And I'm fit and well again, got the stamina of a horse.
You are the only man to return with recruits, Sergeant. That is how the matter is.
The sergeant hesitated for a moment and then saluted.
Yes, sir. Very good, sir. We'll see the new lad settled in, sir. Pleasure to have served, sir.
Can I ask something? Said Maledict.
You do not address an officer directly, Private, snapped Jackram.
No, let the man speak, Sergeant, said the lieutenant. These are unusual times, after all. Yes, my man.
Did I hear you say we're going into battle without training, sir?
Oh, well, most of you will almost certainly be pikemen, said the lieutenant nervously. Not a lot of training there, eh? You just need to know which end is which.
The lieutenant looked as though he wanted to die.
"Pikeman," said Maledict, looking puzzled. "You heard the lieutenant, Private Maledict," snapped the sergeant.
"Yes, sir, thank you, sir," said Maledict, stepping back into the ranks.
"Are there any more questions?" said Blouse, looking along the line.
"Jolly good, then. We leave by the last boat at midnight. Carry on, sergeant,
for now."
What was the other thing? Oh, yes, and I shall need a batman.
"Volunteers to be the lieutenant's batman, step forward, not you, Private Maledict," snapped the sergeant. No one moved.
"Oh, come now," said the lieutenant. Polly slowly raised a hand. "What's a batman, sir?"
The sergeant grinned mirthlessly.
"Fair question," he said. "A batman is like a personal servant who takes care of the officer. Fetches his meals to him, sees he's smartly turned out, that style of thing. So he is free to perform his duties more adequately."
Igor stepped forward.
"Igor, the youth to service, sergeant," he said.
Using the amazing powers of deafness and restricted vision sometimes available even to the most nervous officers, the lieutenant appeared not to notice him. He looked fixedly at Polly. "What about you, Private?" he said.
"Private Perks used to work in a bar, sir," the sergeant volunteered.
"Capital. Report to my quarters in the inn at 6, Private Perks. Carry on, sergeant." As the horse staggered away, Sergeant Jackram directed his glare at the squad, but there was no real fire to it. He appeared to be operating on automatic with his mind elsewhere.
"Don't just stand there trying to look pretty. There's uniforms and weapons inside. Get kitted up. If you want grub, cook it yourself. At the double, dismiss!"
The squad dashed for the barracks, propelled by sheer volume. But Polly hesitated. Corporal Strappy hadn't moved since the snigger had been cut short. He was staring blankly at the ground.
"You are right, Corporal," she said.
"You go away, Potts,"
said the corporal, in a low voice that was much worse than his normal petulant shout.
"Just go away, all right."
She shrugged and followed the others. But she had noticed the steaming dampness around the corporal's feet. There was chaos inside. The barracks was really just one big room which did duty as mess, assembly room and kitchen, with big bunk rooms beyond it. It was empty and well on the way to decay. The roof leaked, the high windows were broken, dead leaves had blown in and lay around on the floor among the rat droppings. There were no pickets, no sentries, no people. There was a big pot boiling on the sooty hearth, though, and its hiss and seethe were the only liveliness in the place. At some point, part of the room had been set up as a kind of quartermaster's store, but most of the shelves were empty. Polly had expected some sort of a queue, some kind of order, possibly someone handing out little piles of clothes. What there was instead was a rummage stall. Very much like a rummage stall, in fact, because nothing on it appeared to be new and little on it appeared to be worth having. The rest of the squad were already pouring through what might have been called merchandise if there was any possibility that anyone could be persuaded to buy it.
"What's this? One size doesn't fit anyone. Well, this tunic's got blood on it. Blood!"
"Well, it is one of the stubborn stains. It's always very hard to get out without.
Where's the proper armour? Oh, no, there's an arrow hole in this one."
"What this? Nothing fits a trow."
A small, leathery old man was at bay behind the table, cowering under the ferocity of Maledict's stare. He wore a red uniform jacket, done up badly, with a corporal's stripes, stained and faded, on the sleeve. The left breast was covered in medals. One arm ended in a hook. One eye was covered in a patch.
"We are going to be pikemen, the lieutenant said," said the vampire. "That means a sword and a pike per man, right? And a shield if there's an arrow storm, right? And a heavy helmet, right?"
"Wrong. You can't yell at me like that," said the man. "See these medals? I'm a—"
A hand descended from above and lifted him over the table. Carborundum held the man close to his face and nodded.
"Yeah, can see him, mister," he rumbled. "And?"
The recruits had fallen silent.
"Put him down, Carborundum," said Polly, gently.
"Why?"
"He's got no legs."
The troll focused. Then, with exaggerated care, he lowered the old soldier to the ground. There were a couple of little tapping sounds as the two wooden peg legs touched the planking.
"Sorry about that," he said.
The little man steadied himself against the table and shuffled his arms around a couple of crutches.
"All right," he said gruffly. "No harm done. But watch it another time."
"But this is ridiculous," said Maledict,
turning to Polly and waving a hand at the heap of rags and bent metal.
You couldn't equip 3 men out of this mess. There are not even any decent boots.
Polly looked along the length of the table. We're supposed to be well equipped, she said to the one-eyed man. We're supposed to be the finest army in the world. That's what we're told, and aren't we winning? The man looked at her. Inside, she stared at herself. She hadn't meant to speak out like that.
So they say, he said in a blank kind of way.
And what do you say? Said Wazza. He'd picked up one of the few swords. It was stained and notched. The corporal glanced up at Carborundum and then at Maledict.
I'm not stupid, you know,
Wazza went on, red in the face and trembling.
All this stuff is off at dead men.
Well, it's a shame to waste good boots, the man began.
We're the last ones, aren't we? Said Wazza. The last recruits.
The peg-legged corporal eyed the distant doorway and saw no relief heading in his direction.
"We've got to stay here all night," said Maledict. "Night," he went on, causing the old corporal to wobble on his crutches, "where who knows what evil flits through the shadows, dealing death on silent wings, seeking a hapless victim who—"
"Yeah, all right, I did see your ribbon," said the corporal. "Look, I'm closing up after you've gone. I just run the stores, that's all. That's all I do, honest. I'm on 1/10 pay me on account of the leg situation, and I don't want trouble."
"And is this all you've got?" said Maledict. "Don't you have a little something put by?"
"Are you saying I'm dishonest?" said the corporal hotly.
"Let's say I'm open to the idea that you might not be," said the vampire. "Come on, corporal. You said we're the last to go. What are you saving up? What have you got?"
The corporal sighed and swung with surprising speed over to a door which he unlocked.
"You'd better come and look," he said, "but it's not good."
It was worse. They found a few more breastplates, but one was sliced in half and the other was one big dent. A shield was in 2 pieces too. There were bent swords and crushed helmets, battered hats and torn shirts.
"I done what I can," sighed the corporal. "I hammered stuff out and washed out the clothes, but it's been weeks since I had any coal for the forge, and you can't do nothing about swords without a forge. It's been months since I got any new weapons, and let me tell you, since the dwarfs buggered off, the steel we've been getting is crap anyway." He rubbed his nose. "I know you think quartermasters are a thieving bunch, and I won't say we might not skim a bit off the top when things are going well, but this stuff? A beetle couldn't make a living off this." He sniffed again. "I ain't been paid in 3 months, neither. I guess 1/10 of nothing is not as bad as nothing, but I was never that good at philosophy."
Then he brightened up.
"Got plenty to eat, at least," he said. "If you like horse, that is. Personally, I prefer rat, but there's no accounting for taste."
"You can't eat a horse," said Shufti.
"Are you be a rat man?" said the corporal, leading the way out into the big room.
"No."
"You'll learn to be one. You'll all learn," said the little 1/10 corporal with an evil grin. "Ever eaten scubbo? No? Nothing like a bowl of scubbo when you're hungry. You can put anything in scubbo. Pork, beef, mutton, rabbit, chicken, duck. Anything. Even rats if you got 'em. It's food for the marching man, scubbo. Got some on the boil out there right now. You can have some of that if you like."
The squad brightened up.
"Sounds good," said Igor. "What's in it?"
"Boiling water," said the corporal. "It's what we call blind scubbo. But there's going to be old horse in a minute unless you've got something better. Could do with some seasonings, at least. Who's looking after the Rupert?"
They looked at one another. The corporal sighed.
"The officer," he explained. "They're all called Rupert or Rodney or Tristram or something. They get better grub than you do. You could try scrounging something at the inn."
"Scrounge?" said Polly. The old man rolled his one eye.
"Yeah, scrounge. Scrounge, nick, have a lend of, borrow, thieve, lift, acquire, purloin. That's what you'll learn if you're going to survive this war, which they say we're winning, of course. Always remember that."
He spat vaguely in the direction of the fire, possibly missing the cooking pot only by accident.
"Yeah, and all the lads I see coming back down the road walking hand in hand with death, they probably overdid the celebrating, eh? So easy to take your hand right off if you open a bottle of champagne the wrong way, eh? I see you've got an eagle with you, you lucky devils. Wish we'd had one when I went off to battle. I wouldn't be kept awake by woodworm if we had."
"We have to steal our food?"
said Maledict.
"No, you can starve if that takes your fancy," said the corporal. "I've starved a few times. There's no future in it. I ate a man's leg when we were snowed up in the Ibblestarn campaign, but fair's fair. He ate mine."
He looked at their faces.
"Well, it's not on, is it, eating your own leg? You'd probably go blind."
"You swap legs?" said Polly, horrified.
"Yep, me and Sergeant Ausgerda. It was his idea, sensible man, the sergeant. That kept us alive for the week, and by then the relief got through. We were certainly relieved about that. Oh, dear. Where's my manners? How do you do, lads? My name's Corporal Scallop. They call me Three Parts."
He held out his hook.
"But that's cannibalism,"
said Tonka, backing away.
"No, it's not. Not officially. Not unless you eat a whole person," said Three Parts Scallop levelly. "Military rules."
All eyes turned to the big pot bubbling on the fire.
"Horse," said Scallop. "I ain't got nothing but horse. I told you. I wouldn't lie to you, boys. Now kit yourselves up with the best you can find. What's your name, stone man?"
"Carborundum," said the troll.
"Got a wee bit of decent snacking anthracite saved about the back, then, and some official red paint for you, because I never met a troll yet that wanted to wear a jacket. The rest of you, mark what I'm telling you. Fill up with grub. Fill your pack with grub. Fill your hat with grub. Fill your boots with soup. If any of you run across a pot of mustard, you hang on to it. It's amazing what mustard'll help down. And look after your mates. And keep out of the way of officers, because they ain't healthy. That's what you learn in the army. The enemy don't really want to fight you, because the enemy is mostly blokes like you who want to go home with all their bits still on. But officers'll get you killed."
Scallop looked around at them.
"There, I said it. And if there's a political amongst you, mister, you can go and tell tales and to hell with you."
After a few moments of embarrassed silence, Polly said, "What's a political?"
"Like a spy, only on your own side," said Maledict. "That's right," said Scallop. "There's one in every battalion these days, snitching on their mates. Get promotion that way, see? Don't want dissent in the ranks, eh? Don't want loose talk about losing battles, right? Which is a load of bloody kludges, because the infantry grumbles all the time. Moaning is part of being a soldier," he sighed. "Anyway, there's a bunkhouse out the back. I beats the palliarses regular, so there's probably not too many fleas."
Once again he looked at blank faces.
"That's straw mattresses to you. Go on, help yourselves. Take what you like. I'm closing up after you've gone anyway. We must be winning now you rattling lads are joining, right?"
The clouds had broken when Polly stepped out into the night, and a half-moon filled the world with cold silver and black. The inn opposite was another rubbishy alehouse for selling bad beer to soldiers. It stank of ancient slops even before she opened the door. The sign was flaked and unrecognisable, but she could read the name. The World Turned Upside Down. She pushed open the door. The smell got worse. There were no customers and no sign of Strappy or Jackram, but Polly did see a servant methodically spreading the inn's dirt evenly across the floor with a mop. "Excuse me," she began, and then remembered the socks, raised her voice and tried to sound angry. "Hey, where's the lieutenant?" The servant looked at her and gestured up the stairs with a thumb. There was only one candle alight up there, and she knocked on the nearest door. "Enter." She entered. Lieutenant Blouse was standing in the middle of the floor in his breeches and shirt sleeves, holding a sabre. Polly was no expert in these matters, but she thought she recognised the stylish, flamboyant pose as the one beginners tend to use just before they're stabbed through the heart by a more experienced fighter.
"Ah, Perks, isn't it?" he said, lowering the blade. "Just, limbering up."
"Yes, sir."
"There's some laundry in the bag over there. I expect someone in the inn will do it. What's for supper?"
"I'll check, sir."
"What are the men having?"
"Scubbo, sir," said Polly.
"Possibly with hor—"
"Then bring me some, will you? We are at war, after all, and I must show an example to my men," said Blouse, sheathing the sword at the third attempt. "That would be good for morale."
Polly glanced at the table. A book lay open on top of a pile of others. It looked like a manual of swordsmanship, and the page it was open at was page 5. Beside it was a thick-lensed pair of spectacles.
"Are you a reading man, Perks?" said Blouse, closing the book.
Polly hesitated, but then what did Ozzer care?
"A bit, sir," she admitted.
"I suspect I shall have to leave most of these behind," he said.
Do take one if you want it. He waved a hand at the books. Polly read the titles. The Craft of War, Principles of Engagement, Battle Studies, Tactical Defence. All a bit heavy for me, sir, she said. Thanks all the same. Tell me, Perks, said Blouse, are the recruits in good spirits? He gave her a look of apparently genuine concern. He really did have no chin, she noticed. His face just eased its way into his neck without much to disturb it on the way. But his Adam's apple now, that was a champion. It went up and down his neck like a ball on a spring. Polly had been soldiering for only a couple of days, but already an instinct had developed. In summary, it was this. Lie to officers. Yes, sir, she said. Getting everything they need? The aforesaid instinct weighed the chances of them getting anything more than they'd already got as a result of a complaint, and Polly said, yes, sir. Of course, it is not up to us to question our orders, said Blouse. Wasn't doing so, sir, said Polly, momentarily perplexed. Even though at times we might feel... The lieutenant began and started again. Obviously, warfare is a very volatile thing, and the tide of battle can change in a moment. Yes, sir, said Polly, still staring. The man had a small spot where his spectacles had rubbed on his nose. The lieutenant seemed to have something on his mind, too. Why did you join up, Perks? He said, groping on the table and finding his spectacles at the third attempt. He had woollen gloves on with the fingers cut out. Patriotic duty, sir, said Polly promptly. You lied about your age? No, sir. Just patriotic duty, Perks? There were lies, and then there were lies. Polly shifted awkwardly. Would quite like to find out what's happened to my brother Paul, sir, she said. Ah, yes. Lieutenant Blouse's face, not a picture of happiness to begin with, suddenly bore a hunted look. Paul Perks, sir, Polly prompted. I'm, not really in a position to know, Perks, said Blouse. I was working as a, I was engaged in special work back at headquarters. Obviously I don't know all the soldiers, Perks. Older brother, is he? Yes, sir. Joined the ins and outs last year, sir. And, have you any younger brothers? Said the lieutenant. No, sir. Ah, well, that's something to be thankful for at any rate, said Blouse. It was a strange thing to say. Polly's brow wrinkled in puzzlement. Sir? She said. And then she felt an unpleasant sensation of movement. Something was slipping slowly down the inside of her thigh. Anything the matter, Perks? Said the lieutenant, catching her expression. No, sir. Just a bit of cramp, sir. All the marching, sir. She clamped both hands around one knee and edged backwards toward the door. I'll just go and see to your supper, sir. Yes, yes, said Blouse, staring at her leg. Yes, please.